Hello and welcome to the Verity Podcast for Thursday, April 25th, 2024. We're the only podcast that keeps on separating the fact from the narrative spin. I'm Adam Clark.
And I'm Eric Steiner. Here's a look at today's top stories. Hezbollah launches its deepest attack into Israel since October 7th.
Russia's deputy defense minister is detained on corruption charges.
The U.S. Supreme Court considers Idaho's abortion ban.
President Joe Biden intends to keep using TikTok through the election.
Amnesty International says the post-World War II global system is on the brink of collapse.
Four people are injured after military horses bolt in London.
Tennessee legislators pass a bill allowing teachers to carry guns in schools.
A tragic naval helicopter crash in Malaysia claims 10 lives.
More than a third of U.S. residents are reportedly exposed to harmful air pollution.
And the FTC bans non-compete agreements potentially impacting millions of Americans.
In our top story, Hezbollah launches its deepest attack into Israel since the war began. Here are the facts as agreed upon by Al Jazeera, New York Times, The Telegraph, Al Mayadeen, Reuters, and CNN. Hezbollah launched its deepest strike into Israel since the two began exchanging fire across the Lebanese-Israeli border shortly after Hamas's October 7th surprise attack on Wednesday, with the group saying it had launched a combined air attack on two Israeli bases north of the city of Akko. The Israeli military denied that the drones reached their intended targets, saying they were intercepted and caused no damage or casualties. An Israeli strike immediately after Hezbollah's attack killed at least two people, including a child, in the town of Hanin, according to Lebanon's state news agency. On Wednesday, the Israeli military said it hit 40 Hezbollah targets in South Lebanon through air and artillery strikes, including a weapons depot. The military also claimed that it had killed more than half of Hezbollah's commanders in South Lebanon. Hezbollah released its own figures on Wednesday, with the group claiming that it had launched well over 1,000 attacks on Israeli border sites and military bases since the war began. The group also claimed that it had inflicted over 2,000 casualties, which includes deaths and injuries, on Israeli forces. Meanwhile, the Israeli military issued on Tuesday new evacuation orders for regions of northern Gaza, including Beit Lahia, where residents said Israeli shelling has recently intensified. The new orders came shortly after Palestinian Islamic Jihad, or PIJ, claimed to have fired rockets into southern Israel. The UN called for an investigation into mass graves discovered in Gaza over the weekend, in which hundreds of bodies have been found. Local authorities are still identifying the bodies, and the details are unclear. Israel has denied its involvement, saying it examined corpses buried outside Nasser Hospital, but they, quote, were returned to their place.
Thank you, Eric, for the facts and the update on our first story today. We're going to start our first round of narrative spins, beginning with a pro-establishment narrative, and it's provided by CBS. The U.S. is doing everything it can to ensure that Israel can eliminate Hamas's military capabilities and prevent regional escalation. Israel must be able to defend itself from terrorist attacks, whether from Gaza or elsewhere, and the U.S. will always support Israel in maintaining its security. However, Netanyahu has gone too far with the war in Gaza, and the U.S. will continue to stress the need for restraint and caution.
The Jerusalem Post has a pro-Israel narrative. Israel has made clear time and time again that it will not tolerate Iranian-backed terrorists operating near its borders. Iran is playing a dangerous game through its attempts to destabilize the region, and Israel must deter Tehran from believing it can gain anything from this war. Regardless of the UN's campaign to demonize Israel, Israel never wanted this war and has been forced to respond to a terrible situation. However, it will aggressively pursue its interests to ensure the security of its citizens.
There's also a pro-Palestine narrative spin, and it's provided by Responsible Statecraft. Reflexive U.S. support for Israel over the decades has finally culminated in a horrifying display of human brutality, mass famine against the Palestinian people. Besides moral consideration around supporting Israel's slaughter in Gaza, Israel has consistently proven time and time again that it is a bad ally and is highly unreliable. While American and Israeli interests continue to diverge, successive American leaders have failed to recalibrate. Now the U.S. is risking a regional war by supporting a rogue Israeli state.
Narrative D comes from Al-Mayadeen. Hezbollah continues to demonstrate its capabilities and restraint, and Israel should keep in mind the weak position it currently faces. The resistance has been clear from day one that it does not want to see this war spiral into a regional conflict. Rather, Hezbollah and its allies only seek to end Israel's crimes in Gaza. Even the Israeli military has acknowledged that Hezbollah's arsenal is fully intact, and a war would be very costly.
Well, our friends at the Metaculous Prediction Community are going to stop this round of narrative spins with their statistical prediction. There's a 1% chance that Hamas will have de facto power in the Gaza Strip on January 1st of 2025, according to the Metaculous Prediction Community. The Russian deputy defense minister has been detained on corruption charges. Here are the facts as agreed upon by BBC News, TASS, Associated Press, and Politico. Timur Ivanov, a Russian deputy defense minister, was arrested on charges of corruption and brought before a court in Moscow on Tuesday. According to Russia's investigative committee, Ivanov was detained on suspicion of taking a bribe in excess of 1 million Russian rubles, equivalent to roughly $10,000. He faces 15 years imprisonment if found guilty. He was brought to the Basmany District Court in Moscow on Tuesday, where he denied the charges against him, before he was remanded in prison till a later date. A second man, described as an associate of Ivanov's, was also brought before the court on similar charges. Ivanov, one of 12 Russian deputy defense ministers, was appointed to the post in 2016, according to the Russian Defense Ministry website. Records show that he oversaw property management, housing, and medical support for the military, as well as the construction and reconstruction of its facilities. Russian media reported that, among other tasks, Ivanov was placed in charge of rebuilding Mariupol, the Ukrainian city that was heavily bombed and occupied by Russian forces at the outset of the war in 2022, shortly after Ivanov was among those Russian officials placed under Western sanctions lists. According to a 2022 investigation by the anti-corruption platform founded by Alexei Navalny, the Russian descendant who died in prison earlier this year, Ivanov allegedly funneled millions from the Russian state to his wife, who was reportedly said to have spent the cash in a lavish manner.
Adam, thanks for those facts. The Carnegie Endowment has the first spin. It's a pro-establishment narrative. Despite presenting himself to the world as a strong man, Russian President Vladimir Putin for years has failed to tackle the rot and corruption that has infested his military. This boils down to the leader's preference for loyal stooges rather than anyone with competence who can challenge his authority.
Pro-Russian narrative is going to be brought to us by TASS. Russian President Putin made his name by tackling corruption in the early 2000s and has continued to do this throughout his years of leadership. Well, just this year, he instructed prosecutors to ramp up their efforts to tackle graft, particularly as it pertains to the Russian special military operation.
And the Nerd Narrative says there's a 50% chance that The Economist will rank Russia as a democracy in its Democracy Index by December of 2051. The Supreme Court hears an Idaho abortion law case. Here are the facts that are agreed upon by Reuters, Washington Post, Guardian, CNN, and Fox News. The U.S. Supreme Court Wednesday heard arguments in Moyle v. United States and Idaho v. United States, consolidated cases involving the Federal Emergency Medical Treatment and Labor Act, or EMTALA, and whether it takes precedence over Idaho's near-total abortion ban. U.S. Solicitor General Elizabeth Prelogar argued that Idaho's law is, quote, entirely inconsistent with EMTALA, because it prohibits abortions to prevent imminent death and for life-altering conditions, such as infertility and other conditions. Representing Idaho, attorney Joshua Turner said that the U.S. government is inaccurately interpreting EMTALA to include protecting a pregnant woman's health as well as her life. Conservative Justices Amy Coney Barrett and Neil Gorsuch asked questions related to how much influence Congress could have over hospitals that receive Medicaid funds. Prelogar said it has, quote, broad authority. Liberal Justice Elena Kagan commented that even when a woman's life isn't, quote, in peril, it's not the right standard of care to fly her to a different state for an abortion. This case will determine Imtala's relationship to state laws and how future administrations can use it to pursue their desired policies.
Thank you, Eric. The spin's going to begin with a Democratic narrative provided by the Huffington Post. The Supreme Court must side with the government in order to protect the health of women facing life-threatening pregnancy complications. Republican-led states should also be warned that if this case goes their way, they'll likely face doctor shortages caused by the threat of criminal charges for providing emergency care.
And the Republican narrative comes from the Federalist Society. Imtala was written to prevent death and protect the unborn, and the Biden administration's attempt to expand its scope is unconstitutional. The Supreme Court can't let the Democratic administration impose its pro-choice views on pro-life states. It's paramount to protect state decisions if those states choose to restrict abortion access.
Well, the nerds think that there's a 50% chance that 56.1% of U.S. states will have Casey-era abortion rights granted on May 1st of 2026. And that's according to the Metaculous Prediction Community. Despite its ban, Biden's campaign will keep using TikTok. Here are the facts as agreed upon by U.S. News & World Report, NBC, New York Post, and Forbes. President Joe Biden's re-election campaign says it will continue posting on TikTok, despite the president signing a bill on Wednesday that could ban the popular short video app. Speaking to NBC News, a Biden campaign official said the fragmented media environment requires us to meet voters where they are. TikTok has come under scrutiny for being owned by Beijing-based parent company ByteDance. The bill Biden signed would force ByteDance, which officials have accused of having ties to the Chinese government, to sell TikTok to an American company within the next 9 months or face a ban in the U.S. The campaign, which joined TikTok in February, pledged to take, quote, enhanced security measures while using the app that it has described as having, quote, legitimate national security concerns with respect to data integrity. The account, at BidenHQ, has roughly 306,000 followers and is part of the campaign's outreach to young voters.
Adam, thank you for the facts. The first spin is Narrative A coming from Intercept. The Biden campaign's hypocrisy is galling. If TikTok is safe enough for it to be part of the president's attempt to accumulate crucial votes from younger citizens, it's safe enough for average Americans to use.
Fast Company's going to continue this spin with a Narrative B. The bill Biden signed doesn't immediately ban TikTok. If everyone else is going to keep using it, the Biden campaign surely can continue doing so. The campaign is taking necessary precautions to keep the account safe.
According to the nerds from Metaculous, there is a 27% chance that TikTok will be sold to a U.S. entity before January 1st, 2025.
By golly.
Again, that's the account at BidenHQ. Again, it's at BidenHQ. You too can get a message from the Biden crew at BidenHQ. According to Amnesty International, the post-World War II global system is on the brink of collapse. Here are the facts as agreed upon by AFP, Amnesty International, The National, Al Jazeera, and CNA. Amnesty International's Secretary General Agnes Callamard on Wednesday said that the post-1948 world order is, quote, on the brink of collapse due to global conflicts and unchecked artificial intelligence growth. During the release of the organization's annual report, Callamard alleged that key powers, including Russia and the PRC, could jeopardize the entire 1948 rule-based order and erode the fundamental values of shared humanity. The report criticized Israel in the ongoing war against Hamas in Gaza and also condemned the West, including the U.S. and the U.K., for what Amnesty characterized as grotesque double standards towards Moscow and Tel Aviv. Calamard acknowledged that Hamas had committed horrific crimes on October 7th and also said that Israel's campaign of retaliation plunged the world into chaos, where the moral lessons of, quote, never again from 1948 were shattered. Furthermore, Amnesty said that Israel's campaign of collective punishment, Russia's invasion of Ukraine, and human rights violations worldwide, including in Myanmar, risk decimating the, quote, global rule-based order. Urgent measures suggested by Amnesty include reforming the UN Security Council, implementing legislative and regulatory policies to rein in AI, and protecting civilians and marginalized communities around the world.
Thanks, Eric. Informed Comment is going to begin the spin with a narrative A. The aftermath of Hamas's 2023 attack on Israel and the subsequent Israeli response mirrors the U.S. reaction to 9/11, which also eroded the rules-based global order. These incidents underscore the need to strengthen a fair application of international law and a shift towards a more just global order to prevent further atrocities and promote peace.
And narrative B comes from The Hill. Global shifts in power dynamics are driving countries to recalibrate their strategies and defense spending. Rising tensions between the U.S., Russia, China, Iran, and Israel are prompting significant military buildups and alliances. There is an urgent need for a new approach to prevent potential conflicts. The post-World War II order as we know it has changed dramatically.
Eric, the nerds think that there's a 20% chance that there will be a World War III before the year 2050.
Well, and that's according to the Metaculous Prediction Community.
News out of the UK, where four have been injured after military horses bolt through London. Here are the facts as agreed upon by Guardian, BBC News, Independent, ITV News, and X. Four people were injured on Wednesday morning after military horses unseated their riders and bolted through the streets of London. Speaking to the BBC, a British Army spokesperson said that a total of five runaway horses from the Household Cavalry Unit unseated a total of four soldiers. After escaping in West London just after 8 a.m. local time, horses injured bystanders in a number of locations across the UK capital. One of the horses was spotted in Shadwell in East London as far as 3.3 miles away, or 5.3 kilometers. It's believed two vehicles were damaged. One taxi driver had the windows of his Mercedes people carrier smashed, as well as its rear panels damaged. The windscreen of a parked double-decker bus was also smashed after a collision. One horse was covered in blood in some images. The British Army announced that three soldiers were being treated for non-life-threatening injuries, describing the event as, quote, extremely rare. It was also confirmed that all horses were safe and receiving veterinary care where appropriate.
Adam, thanks for the facts. The first spin is narrative A coming from Dazed. Although many have made light of London's runaway horses, likening the event to an apocalyptic omen, the reality is that horses forced to wear decorated outfits and trot along London's heaving capital is nothing short of animal abuse and was always bound to go wrong.
The Telegraph's going to follow that up with a narrative B. This was a freak accident that will be investigated. By no means it should be used to call for the end of a famous British tradition. These horses are integral to state ceremonies and hold a unique power to draw tourists to the UK capital. One rare case of chaos shouldn't mean the end of a foundation of the country's culture.
And the nerds from Metaculous say there's a 67% chance that reducing wild animal suffering be a mainstream moral issue in America before 2200.
Eric, this had to be insane for people just minding their own business and seeing these blood-covered horses come galloping down through the streets like the four horsemen of the apocalypse. What could they have been thinking?
The end is nay. The end is nay. The end is nay. Tennessee passes a bill allowing teachers to carry guns. Here are the facts as agreed upon by the Tennessean, CBS, Forbes, and Washington Post. By a vote of 68 to 28 Tuesday, a bill that will allow some trained teachers and school staff to carry handguns was passed by the Republican majority Tennessee House while dozens of protesters voiced their displeasure and had to be cleared from the chamber's galleries. The bill, which passed despite the defection of four Republican lawmakers who joined with Democrats to vote against it, will become law if Republican Governor Bill Lee signs it or allows it to become law without his signature. He has never vetoed a bill. Under this bill, workers who wish to carry a handgun would need a permit and written permission from the school's principal and law enforcement officials, but disclosing to others who are carrying a gun would be forbidden. Workers would also need to clear a background check and obtain 40 hours of training to be able to carry. This bill, which in April passed the state Senate by an overwhelming party line vote, is partly the legislature's response to the March 2023 shooting at the Covenant School in Nashville, where 3 students and 3 teachers were killed. That shooting prompted Lee to call the legislature to a special session on public safety after he signed an executive order strengthening background checks and voiced support for red flag laws. But lawmakers passed less sweeping measures instead.
Eric, with a politically motivated story like this, you can imagine that we've got some politically motivated spins. We're going to start with the Democratic narrative, and it's provided by The Guardian. Republicans have passed this dangerous bill despite polling showing most U.S. teachers think that more guns in schools will make their workplace less safe. In the wake of the Covenant School tragedy, Tennessee residents were looking for legislation to make kids safer, not a law that would increase firearms in schools. If this leads to yet another tragedy, Republicans will have blood on their hands.
Breitbart has the Republican narrative. This bill will make kids in school safer, and Democrats and other opponents are misrepresenting the reforms being made. Law enforcement officers and private security guards are already allowed to carry guns in schools, so this bill expands who can be armed. At the same time, the additional armed personnel will be trained and have their backgrounds checked, meaning there will be more good guys with guns if a bad guy with a gun enters a school.
Eric, the nerds think that there's a 50% chance that there will be 1.41 small firearms per capita in the U.S. in the year 2029.
And that's according to the Metaculous Prediction Community.
And you know that 0.41 is going to be using hollow points.
Oh, definitely.
Yeah.
Definitely. So that's like 41 divided by 8 because the point, the hollow point spreads out. So
it
makes it even bigger. So
yeah,
they've got to redo their numbers.
Yeah, you're right. They're going to have to go back to the drawing board.
Back to the drawing board.
Crunch some numbers.
News out of Malaysia, where 10 are dead after 2 Navy helicopters crashed during a rehearsal. Here are the facts as agreed upon by Associated Press, Reuters, Guardian, BBC News, Malay Mail, and Al Jazeera. 2 Malaysian military helicopters crashed into each other on Tuesday morning, killing all 10 crew members on board and injuring a swimmer as one chopper hit a swimming pool. The 2 Navy helicopters were rehearsing for Saturday's parade, celebrating the 90th anniversary of the Royal Malaysian Navy, when they collided in mid-air at the Lumut Naval Air Station in the western state of Perak. A video of the incident published in local media showed several helicopters flying in formation when one aircraft's rotors clipped another before crashing to the ground. Local police have confirmed the video's authenticity. 7 of the victims were aboard a HOM M503-3 helicopter, believed to have hit a runway, while the other 3 were in a Finnick M502-6 helicopter that fell into the pool. All 10 were pronounced dead on site, the Royal Malaysian Navy said. Defense Minister Mohammad Khalid Norden said the Navy was investigating the incident and told reporters that the M503-3 was being flown for the first time during the flyby. He added that the victims were aged between 26 and 41. Several serious helicopter crashes have occurred in Malaysia, including one in 2015 that killed the U.S. ambassador. Collisions in 2016 and 2020 killed 6 and 2 people, respectively, and in 2023, 10 people died when a private jet crashed onto a highway.
Adam, thank you for the facts. The first spin is Narrative A, coming from Bernama. Signs point to Tuesday's crash being caused by a critical point failure of the helicopter's structure, but the exact cause remains unknown. This is a tragic outcome, but authorities will be sure to release information as they investigate for the benefit of the victims' families.
Narrative B is provided by The Star. While tragedies can be unpredictable, there are key indicators suggesting Tuesday's helicopter crash should have been anticipated. One of the helicopter types involved in the tragedy had been involved in a collision just a month prior, and the aircraft model has experienced other problems over the years. It doesn't seem as if all possible safety precautions were taken to prevent this crash.
There is a 7.5% chance that Malaysia will experience a successful coup d'etat before 2040. That is a nerd narrative coming from Metaculus. According to a recent report, almost 40% of U.S. residents are exposed to air pollution. Here are the facts as agreed upon by Guardian, NPR Online News, NBC 10 Philadelphia, and CNN. A report released Wednesday by the American Lung Association says nearly 40% of Americans, that's more than 131 million people, are exposed to harmful levels of air pollution. The State of the Air report states that although there have been long-term efforts to clean the air in the U.S., the situation has worsened in recent years. Rising temperatures have increased ozone production and dust. Wildfire smoke has polluted the air with harmful particles. California is home to four of the top five most polluted cities, as wildfires, drought, and high temperatures contribute to the deterioration of air quality. Los Angeles had the most severe smog problem, while Bakersfield had the highest level of particle pollution for the fifth consecutive year. Particle pollution can cause asthma, lung cancer, chronic lung diseases, premature birth, and pregnancy loss. This report comes out despite the U.S. Environmental Protection Agency, or EPA, reporting a 78% reduction in outdoor pollution emissions since the Clean Air Act was enacted by former President Richard Nixon in 1970.
Eric, we're going to start the spins with the establishment critical narrative provided by NBC Channel 4 Washington. Poor American air quality is even more bad news for low-income and minority populations, which have historically inhaled more polluted air than people in affluent neighborhoods or gentrified areas. This is clearly a product of structural racism, and it's a crisis that must be addressed by the U.S. government.
Newsweek has a pro-establishment narrative. In order to tackle this problem, the U.S. government needs to come up with all-encompassing solutions. Already, cars are using cleaner fuels and coal-fired facilities are being shut down. More can be done as long as there is the requisite amount of federal and local investment to continue the momentum.
Eric, the nerds think that there's a 50% chance that there will be at least 113 million disability-adjusted life years, or DALYs, caused by outdoor air pollution in the year 2030.
And that's according to the Metaculus prediction community.
In our final story today, the Federal Trade Commission has banned non-compete agreements that could impact millions of workers. Here are the facts as agreed upon by ABC News, The Wall Street Journal, the Federal Trade Commission, The Hill, and Reuters. The U.S. Federal Trade Commission, or the FTC, voted 3-2 to ban non-compete agreements, which prohibit employees from working for competing companies either in a specific geographic area or time frame for an estimated 30 million employees. The Democratic majority panel's ruling bans companies from enforcing existing non-competes for all non-senior executive employees and prohibits them from writing new ones for future senior executives. The FTC argues these contracts, quote, keep wages low, suppress new ideas, and block over 8,500 new startups from emerging every year. It also claims the ban would increase average annual pay by $524 and lower health care costs by up to $194 billion over the next decade. The rule only applies to non-competes. It does not include other contract clauses such as non-disclosure and confidentiality agreements. While the rule is set to take into effect 120 days after it's in the Federal Register, pro-business organizations are expected to challenge it in court. Congress has never given the FTC authority over non-competes, but several laws have been proposed. While the two dissenting Republicans on the FTC panel cited a lack of federal authority, pro-business groups claim it will hurt businesses trying to protect trade secrets. Three states have already passed their own non-compete bans, with a dozen others limiting their use.
Adam, thanks for the facts of that story. The first spin is Narrative A coming from the New York Senate. Non-compete contracts rarely protect company secrets. In fact, their primary function is to shackle employees to their existing companies by forcing them to switch careers or move far away to find a new job if they seek to leave, something most people can't afford to do. By prohibiting employees from starting their own businesses, these contracts also weaken competition. If we want employees and entrepreneurs to thrive, these agreements should be banned at all levels of business.
The U.S. Chamber of Commerce is providing us with the Narrative B. Despite what these anti-business government officials claim, non-compete clauses actually promote competition and help, not hinder, employees. This is also an egregious, unconstitutional power grab by three unelected regulators who think they can decide what is and isn't a competitive market. The FTC has never granted such overarching authority, which is why actual American business leaders will fight this in court.
The Nerd Narrative says there's a 50% chance that the United Kingdom GDP per capita will be less than 50% of that of the world's leading major economy by July of 2034. What do you think of that?
I'm glad they clearly explained that to us. Aren't you?
Yeah, there are absolutely no questions in my head at all.
No questions at all. I was like, wow.
None.
I did have.
That was completely clear.
I had questions going in, but then they laid that out and I was like,
What else could they do? It was
thank
just,
you, Metaculous.
Right there, they served it on a silver platter. There was no figuring out at all on my part. I knew exactly where they were going.
Bravo.
That's what I say.
Bravo.
Yeah, that's what I say. Bravo. Bravo. Thanks for listening to the Verity Podcast for Thursday, April 25th, 2024.
Each day, we use machine learning to read about 5,000 articles from about 100 newspapers and figure out which ones are about the same stories. For each major story, our editorial team then extracts both the key facts that all the articles agree on and the key narratives where the articles differ.
Find out more at verity.news and download the Verity app on the Apple App Store or Google Play. For Adam Clark, I'm Eric Steiner, inviting you to join us next time on the Verity Podcast.